Welcome to the Redefining Recruitment Podcast, where we challenge the typical idea of what recruitment is all about and help cultivate a new type of HR thinker. The people we talk to are at the forefront of these thoughts and are delivering on the promise of new ways to engage future talent and leaders. Let's start with our host, the leaders and managers of one of the most innovative recruitment solution businesses in Central Europe, made up of GoodCall, DataCruits ATS, and the Recruitment Academy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new podcast, Redefining Recruitment, where the leaders of companies GoodCall, Recruitment Academy, and DataCruits are talking about the actual topics with leaders from the HR industry and business. My name is Jose Carles, and I'm here with my peer, Blake.
Blake Whitman.
Hi, Blake.
Hi.
Blake, can you tell us what's our first guest in our first episode of this awesome podcast, hopefully?
Definitely. As you correctly mentioned, the Redefining Recruitment is kind of it's a mirror of what our companies want to do, which is to wake up the industry. And we thought that Vodafone would be a great way to start. They're a large corporate, but they're also quite known to be innovators in both business and people. In fact, they won a Recruitment Academy Award last year for the top career website. So we have with us today Carl Clark, with almost 20 years experience in business, all of it in various roles within the HR function. He's worked in energy, and for the past 6 years, he's been in Vodafone, with about 2 years, almost exactly 2 years if I'm not mistaken, in Czech Republic as Director of People and Property. Not people as property, but people and property. So I'd like to welcome Carl Clark to the podcast.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Hi, Carl.
Nice to have you here. Carl, if you could maybe talk to us about the last few months within Vodafone, and mostly I'd like to start with what has changed since COVID hit. What's relevant for you, for the listeners, since COVID hit within Vodafone? How did you guys take care of it and look after it here?
Yeah, so let me start by saying it's been a really busy and full-on a couple of months, pretty much, probably since February, March, where the world literally just changed drastically. And they were kind of saying that the last kind of big financial crisis was very much driven by CFOs. It very much feels, from where I'm sitting, that this crisis is very much all around people and how we support people. And what I guess I think about our operations here in the Czech Republic, there's a number of different elements to our business. So for contact centers and frontline agents, you know, we've put the majority of them at home, and they've been at home now for the past kind of 4 months. If I think about our retail stores and our frontline employees in retail, I mean, they've kept trading. It's a critical part of the infrastructure. People appreciated the connectivity. So it's around how do you actually support people in stores? If you were based in kind of a headquarters environment, you were definitely working from home. So overall, we had like 85% of our population kind of at home during COVID, which brings a tremendous amount of change just to how you do things. From how do you support people, how do you then need to think about infrastructure and property, how to keep people safe, and even just, you know, suddenly being able to give someone a laptop who previously didn't necessarily have a laptop if they're in a contact center, how do you give them the tools to then work at home and kind of work remotely? So it's been a full-on process. And obviously this has been, the crisis period in itself went on for many weeks. So this wasn't a short-term kind of 1 week, let's just get through it. This went on for some time. So it's like training for a marathon. It's right. How do you then give the organization resilience, and how do you make some of the changes kind of really sustainable? So it's been pretty full on.
I have an interesting question here. I've heard from a number of companies that decisions and processes and projects that would normally take months or even years to agree on and get the structure and implement were done in a matter of days or weeks or much shorter. Did anything like that within Vodafone happen where things went so quickly it kind of blew your mind?
Yeah, no, very much so. So when the government was doing its daily briefings, we had a kind of a squad who met at the end of the day. That team reviewed what the government had kind of said, and in effect, whatever we needed to do was then implemented the following day. So we suddenly went into a very kind of 24-hour kind of response cycle. So decision-making definitely got shorter. And then from a customer perspective, there are a number of things that we did that were taking kind of 3 to 4 weeks, and we've reduced them down, like online delivery, for example. So, you know, getting you a set-top box, we were doing in a couple of weeks, and now it took like a couple of days. Wow. Because, you know, people were staying at home, they wanted access to TV. So we could suddenly open up some of our packages to them, which was a really great thing to do. But it meant needing to be much more agile and much more responsive, just in terms of how we did things. I think the question, though, for organizations is how sustainable some of that is. So in-flight decision-making, absolutely fine in a crisis mode. Mm-hmm. Some of the longer-term things where you're trying to kind of brainstorm and think slightly longer-term does take a little bit longer to kind of percolate. And actually kind of doing some of that kind of real creative kind of thinking doesn't necessarily lead itself to kind of a Zoom call or a Skype call. Actually getting people in a room is, I think still has a place.
Yeah. I think even with our organization, like sometimes it's at like, when you had some plans like that you wanted to change something, now is the time to change, because sometimes some companies, they have nothing to lose. Yeah? So they can change it right now. Carl, what's your take on, there are a lot of discussions about remote working. So it probably affected any organization in some way that they use more these ways. But there are some maybe health issues. There are maybe some issues about if it's really efficient or not. Yeah? Maybe for 2 or 3 months, it's feasible, like to have almost like remote workforce. But from the long term, how does it affect our even like bodies? I would say, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think COVID-19 is fundamentally helping us rethink, I guess, the longer term kind of people strategy. This is a real game changing moment. And I guess the way I'm thinking about it is we're breaking down into kind of a number of different areas. So first off, smart working. So we did a massive survey across our organization about 2 months ago, really asking that when we get through COVID, what do you want to do? Do you want to return to the office? Do you want to continue working from home? The biggest thing people really enjoyed was flexibility. So having the flexibility is something they really want to hang on to. So being able to kind of support a family, being at home a bit more, working from a different location, massive plus. So pre-COVID, we were probably on 25% smart working. Post-COVID, new world, we're probably going to be up at 60%, and I think our frontline agents are going to be nearer to kind of 70%. So that definitely means we are going to make that shift into kind of a more permanent, you know, mantra on smart working. However, the interesting thing our employees tell us is they need help to make that transition. And things do need to kind of change around how we support that. So how people use the workspace needs to change, because you're not going to come in and sit down and type your laptop. So you're now going to come into the office and actually you want to meet people, you want to socialize, you want to connect. So the office space needs to then reflect that kind of change over just how people use kind of the space differently. That's kind of a key thing. I think the other kind of key thing is around tools and skills. So, you know, the online tech needs to be there to support people working from home. And that means better connectivity, better online collaboration tools for sure, but also skills. So we've all been on Zoom calls from the morning to the end of the day, and actually from a health perspective, you know, you actually get quite tired. So it's realizing that actually you need to adapt a different way of working when you're now working from home. There's a lot of research externally that also says that productivity goes up when you smart work. So people tend to log on earlier. They're now using their commute time to kind of log in first thing in the morning. They will probably work through a lunch break, whereas previously in the office, they would have caught up with colleagues. And then they may finish slightly later as well. So actually the working day gets longer. Now, from a sustainability perspective, that then starts raising questions around health and well-being. So therefore, how can we help people kind of better balance that kind of home-work-life thing? I think the other kind of interesting piece of feedback that we had was just around how you kind of separate kind of the boundaries between kind of the office life and your home life. Mm. So normally you'd finish in the office, you jump on, you know, the metro or get in your car to drive home, and your brain has that little bit of time to kind of just think and unwind before you get in and then kind of see your family. Now all of your world is kind of in one place, which then makes it actually quite hard to then kind of separate, which actually can cause, you know, signs of kind of stress and a degree of anxiety. So I think we also need to help people a little bit just around how they integrate it better, which again is another kind of area for us to kind of really step into around training and kind of development.
It's like going to exercise without actually a warm-up.
Yeah,
you just wake up and you just hop on a Zoom call and
or, exactly, there. Or even finishing a workout and then, you know, walking directly into a meeting room. I've sat in my car in the garage before for an extra 5 minutes when I can feel that I'm still fully going. And if I walk into my house with my wife and the kids there, I will not be able to, you know, reciprocate anything that comes into me. I will not be able to take it on. And I know that I'm still going, so I'll sit there for 5 minutes.
And we all need that little bit of time just to kind of decompress and just unwind a little
bit.
Interesting, one of the really good things that I have seen kind of come through this kind of COVID thing was this thing around innovation and experimentation. Mm-hmm. So COVID just gave us the freedom to try and experiment and just try new things at rapid pace because we had to. And I think we really need to culturally hang on to that as we now kind of start thinking about kind of the future and what we want to do differently. So there are some key nuggets and ingredients that we really kind of want to hang on to.
That's a question I wanted to ask. What can you name some specifics that you think you want to try and keep from the COVID time that you were able to experiment with and people found out this is great, we love it, we want to keep doing it? I mean, other than the classic smart working, as you call it, is there something else that you think, hey, this is going to be a keeper?
Yeah, smart working was the obvious one, but I also think training as well. So there's many more kind of online training activities, which we were kind of previously doing in a classroom-based style, which have now moved online. We all want to kind of keep that. I think the other thing it's able us to do from a recruitment perspective is just really open up the talent base. Mm-hmm. So whereas previously you were looking for talent around a specific geographical area because you had an office or a hub there. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're now saying it's kind of borderless, boundary free, because you don't need to be in the office all of the time, it suddenly means you can recruit from anywhere in the country, mm-hmm. which then just opens you up just a little bit more. Now, if you're looking for coders or developers or software engineers, actually that really helps. That really kind of plays into that kind of space. So definitely more stuff online, definitely more experimentation, and definitely kind of more smart working going forward.
With so many people, let's say a higher percentage working from home more often, as you're saying, talk to us about company culture, because this has been one that a lot of companies pride themselves on having a very specific, very strong, and very kind of loved company culture. I would say that Vodafone would count themselves as one of those that says we have a specific company culture, we like it, and we like the fact that our people are involved with it. But how do you convey company culture if somebody's only in the office once or twice a week? How do you get that across?
Yeah, and actually from an engagement perspective, so we were running pulse surveys every kind of 2 weeks during COVID, which gave us a really kind of nice kind of heartbeat to the organization where people were. It also helped us just kind of understand what groups were having kind of a more engaged experience and were able to cope and where we needed to provide more support. Actually, new people joining our organization needed more support. If you were established in the company for a period of time, you already had kind of long-lasting relationships, you found it much easier to kind of reach out for support and really struggling. So company culture is a nice build on that, because if you're bringing people in, then how do you quickly kind of bring them up to speed? For us, certainly at a senior level, it's very much around buddies at the moment. So if we bring you in, then we want to give you a buddy pretty much from the get-go, someone who's been in the organization for a while who can just kind of help you navigate. Mm-hmm. For contact center employees in particular, we've been talking about actually we probably need to incubate you first. So there's a period of time where you may need to kind of come together. It could be 2 months, it could be 3 months, just to help orientate you, build up your network, get a feel for the company first before you go into a smart working regime. Right. So there's almost an incubation period mm-hmm. where we need to kind of bring you into the culture first before you leave. But culture also emulates every single touch point as well. So if we're serious about moving to smart working and enabling people to make that transition, then that also needs to then be reflected in all of our kind of touch points. So attraction, recruitment, how we train and how we develop. And I guess building on that point, I mean, there's one of the things we're actively looking at the moment is whether we need to start looking for some different skills when we start bringing you into the organization. So if you're going to be smart working, then things like autonomy suddenly becomes a much more kind of critical skill set to look for, because you need someone who is self-motivated, disciplined, and can work autonomously when they work from home, which is a slightly different profile than what we may have looked for previously.
And some people honestly say, I have a problem with that. I cannot work like from home. I'm distracted, like this TV here, not talking about kids, for example, and so on, and they simply cannot do it.
I think that's a really good point, actually, because actually smart working doesn't work for everyone. And actually, we also need to be flexible as an organization where you can't mandate smart working for everyone. So if you're in a, you know, you're in a relationship that may be a difficult relationship, you may be having problems with your partner, actually the safe space of coming into an office environment actually may be the right thing for you. And that's something that we would still want to always make sure we can offer.
I like that how the technology is trying to adjust to the current situation. I was yesterday at the conference, Sourcing Summit Virtual, which is Sourcing Summit is a like regular talent sourcing conference, usually in Europe. But this was in virtual space, but it's not just like some Zoom or some webinar software. This was called Remo, where you can actually see the tables at the conference. You can sit at the table and you can chat with the people just at the table with a video, with audio. So it's like simulating like the real live conference where you go table by table and chatting with people. Or there is this new device, it's like a belt. So instead of hearing music, for example, from the earphones, when you go to a concert, you are just feeling the music with the whole body. So they created this like vibrating belt you put on and you can absorb the music from your home, but with actually feeling as a concert.
Yeah. Wow, it's like 4D movies, but bringing it to the virtual conference space.
Yeah.
I know a company called Imprompt.me that started off 1 or 2 years ago doing normal conference app to help conference networking in real life. And COVID came and they said, oops, we don't have much of a business. And they pivoted to a similar product that you're talking about, allowing people to network, kind of speed networking, where you have a time limited amount, but you can still get the real conference experience, but get it online. So I'm fascinated to see all these interesting technologies coming out to help. What about within recruitment? Have you been able to use technology in some special ways to help your recruitment during these times?
Yeah, so Vodafone was already partnering with a company called HireVue, and we've been partnering with them for a while, which is all based around kind of video-based interviewing. So particularly for graduates, you in effect kind of film yourself on a video, it goes in, it's automated questions, there's a scientific process on the back end that helps kind of filter and screen. Which is a good way of testing both, can graduates kind of use the tech, can they film, which gives you a bit more confidence around, coming into
Do they have like one chance to do it, or they get already?
No, you get up to kind of three chances to kind of record it if you're not happy with it. So they give you a couple of shots. Yeah. And we started using it for frontline retail roles as well because of volume. Also, that's also kind of working quite well. So that may be something we expand kind of going forward. Mm-hmm. It seems to be working. Seems to be working quite well so far. I think all of our recruitment activity during COVID, all of it happened online, and we kept recruiting.
Yeah.
So we've got big plans to kind of do a lot of stuff around software development at the moment. So all of that just kind of nicely fitted into being able to keep going.
And you were able to, let's say, hire people, meaning at least make the offer stage without ever meeting them face to face. Is that right?
Start to finish.
Wow.
Yeah. Start to finish.
And have those people started already? Have they been onboarded? And
1st of August.
Really?
So perhaps we should rerun this in August and I can give you some feedback.
No, I would actually be very curious to hear about that. I think most of the... I'm pretty confident, especially using some of the technology and having good evaluators, interviewers on the company side should be fine. I still would love to hear if there's any kind of... some issues that come up that you realize, if this were in person, we would probably notice that or that. Because I've heard a few stories about that. We did a webinar a few weeks ago where we heard, there were some issues here and there. We didn't realize the people had these challenges. And in the office, we start to see it.
Yeah.
But I believe that the majority actually won't have those issues. But
it would be interesting to see whether it starts reducing things like bias.
Because
it's much more difficult to make judgments on a VC than what it is when you meet someone face to face. More things go through your mind that you can then filter. So it would be interesting to see whether we adopt a slightly different approach.
Very true.
I think it's also a question of losing opportunity. When you are not able to onboard people completely remotely, you are maybe losing something. Of course, one case out of 10 can happen that it's a bad hire because of remote onboarding. That might be the case.
Versus maybe all the biases that could be involved in full face-to-face, where you may have hiring the wrong people, maybe more than one in 10. So who knows, maybe it might be even better.
But it's definitely a global thing. Yesterday, as I mentioned, the sourcing summit, Greg Savage, the guy from Australia, also basically talking about this, that this is the new thing, this is the new phenomenon there, which is happening right now.
It's a bizarre. So there's a website called kind of Upworks, which is basically a freelance site you can go on and bid for pieces of work. And again, if you wanted someone to kind of work for you on a short-term project basis to do a report or a presentation or something, I mean, again, you're never going to meet the person. You basically it's all through web-based technology. So.
That's true.
I use one guy from Fiverr, and I still don't know if he's from Philippines or India. And I don't care. He's doing a great job.
Does it matter?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, the output is there, and that's it.
Carl, what would you say is something that you definitely want to put behind you from these COVID times? And how close are you? Are you from kind of going back to non-COVID, at least within the company structure? Are there some things that you're already thinking, can't wait to end that, and the people would also like to end those things?
Yeah, so I think we were approaching kind of COVID, I guess, in three waves. So wave one, phase one was the initial kind of crisis management piece, which I think we've just begun moving from. We're now in kind of phase two, which is this transitionary piece, which we're trying to make as short as possible, but we're also trying to accelerate kind of phase three, which is this, what is the new future going to look like and how quickly do we get there?
Yeah.
So we are completely redesigning our office space, which will now be in place for the 1st of January, which is a major piece of work because we want to move more into a collaboration hub. And we want to really actively move into this kind of notion of smart working being either 60% or 70% kind of going forward. So we actually kind of don't want everyone to rush back to the office, so they're moving to this kind of new way. So we're using this transition period to make sure we can put the enablers in place to kind of get there. So I guess that's how we've approached it. But with each of those kind of smart working kind of ratios, there's still an element where you need to kind of have social interactions, teams do need to meet and connect. And I think the thing to put behind us is that kind of social isolation piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because teams really do need some face-to-face time just to kind of reconnect, let off some steam, even if it's for a coffee morning, even if it's for a beer after work. But that human interaction, I think, is so, so critical. Because it is really the fabric which kind of keeps the kind of company going,
mm-hmm.
and it just provides a massive support mechanism for all of our people that when things get difficult, they know they've got a friend or a buddy to reach out to for help and some support. So leaving behind the social isolation piece, getting back to social connection before we move into this kind of new phase is kind of the key thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm also kind of, I don't think 100% home working is where you can go. It has to be a blended approach, because I do think the human interaction piece is so critical. Now, those interactions could vary and change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's team meetings, it's collaboration, it's more informal, but you still need to have a blended approach.
Because there are companies that are saying, hey, we can do this. Home office, 100%, or at least 90%, this is the way to go. The people are happy with it. You disagree with that, or somehow think that the human element is overriding.
And I disagree, because our people are telling us that's not where they want to kind of go. So I guess the bottom-up feedback is, 85%, 3 days from home, absolutely makes sense. But I still need those 2 days in the office where I can do other things, have a team meeting, I can get on a whiteboard and kind of chalk things up. So it is a blend, I think, which is where we're heading.
I agree with the companies that I've spoken to that say, I don't think we're going to go back, maybe they'll go back from time to time, but in general, we're home office from now on. I question in the medium term, in 6 more months, mm-hmm. I think they'll start having issues with people. I think people will start saying, hey, can I go to the office? I'm actually predicting there may be a point where, the old greatest benefit that everybody wanted in Czech Republic and around the world was home office,
mm-hmm.
will be office. Yeah. And there'll be people saying, do you have an office I can go to? Wonderful, then I'll work for you because I'm at home.
It's going to be a benefit.
It's going to be a benefit. You can have an office. Yeah. It could be. You can have an office, maybe a benefit in the future, because I don't think people in the long term can just sit at home. I don't believe from the company culture side, even with buddies working interactively, I agree that if you're long term from home for really 6 months, I question how your productivity can stay that long, even if you hire kind of very disciplined people. I don't think.
I think I'm a former IT guy, and I have a lot of friends working, like for example, 5 years on remote from home office. Most of them started to work somewhere like at the office. They were really discussing this. Hey, it's a problem. I'm really like jailed at home every day, no connection. And maybe at the beginning it's like a benefit, but then they realize that it might be a problem, like almost like health issue, I would say. So even with suddenly like this, you know, generation, like we have Facebook, Instagram, we are checking notification and so on, and it's influencing our attention span, which is like going down, like that's the problem. And I think this might be a new phenomenon. We cannot probably measure it right now, but we will see after some time where there are a lot of companies having remote workers that there is something happening with our brains, I would almost say.
Yeah. So we talk a little bit around kind of resilience. So to move into home working and manage all the stresses and pressures that you get either through your day job or through all the technology kind of causes, you can get a little bit more stress. So we talk about needing to build up resilience and digital resilience in particular. And actually one of the key ingredients of how you build your own resilience is around social and relational connections, because you need family, friends, colleagues, support networks that can help you through those periods where it does get a little difficult and tough. So if you're 100% working from home, it really diminishes your ability to build those social connections. It's around how do you kind of keep those. I think the other interesting point is for managers. So I think we are really going to have to spend more time with people leaders in our organization to help them lead virtual teams going forward. Because even things like, you know, how do you bring somebody into the organization? How do you onboard? How do you performance manage if you've got your team in different locations and you don't have that kind of day-to-day contact? Again, there's some interesting research that talks about how employees feel around personal development. So previously, they would normally go to their manager at the end of a meeting and say, so how did that go? Is there anything I could have done differently? It's so much more difficult to have that really informal conversation if you jumped off a Zoom call and then you're going into another kind of Zoom call, because you just don't have that same level of interaction and personal connectivity with your manager.
Well, just look at the daily feedback that a more junior person would get in an 8-hour day. Throughout that day, they're listening to other people around them, and other people are listening to them and seeing what they're doing. I would estimate that throughout a typical day, a junior would get 2, 3, 4, 5 small little hints and tips and development opportunities, exactly. Mini coachings, whether they know it or not. Whereas on a Zoom call, how do you do that? I mean, you could be on Zoom calls all day long, nonstop. Yeah,
that was my crazy idea, that you would have like a cam.
Nonstop.
Where you would see all people from your team, for example, nonstop, as you do over the working hours, right? So when you are at your place, everybody can see you. But still, I think there is the missing point that you are physically, I think it's really some like body, hormonal, whatever issue, or not issue, but think that it's different when we are here like this. We could do the webinar or the podcast over online world as well, right?
But it would be totally different. I had an e-commerce startup before where at one point we had one guy in Ireland, one guy in Sydney, and me in Prague. And for a little while, it was kind of cool. We do, you know, conference calls at, you know, midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning so that we could all be on it.
Cool and
stuff.
Trendy.
Yeah, exactly. Which was cool like once. And then it was not cool again. But what we found was that, yes, we could sort things out when we needed to. But when we are actually all in one office, things that would previously, remote like that, that would take us a day to 2 days to fully sort out through chat and email and everything, took us 5 minutes to do, because we were sitting next to each other saying, by the way, what do we want to do? Oh yeah, that's right. Done. And that going into the human interaction, that I don't think you can replace. And you know, even if you're getting feedback every day, I don't think that small little development, and this is what my worry would be for juniors working even you know, 3 days a week from home, which brings me to one of my final questions. Are you planning, or have you started sort of training people how to work from home? And maybe, as you just mentioned, it's a very interesting topic on managing remotely, but have you started telling people, this is our advice on how to work from home?
So yes, but we need to do more. So during crisis, during phase one, we did a lot of stuff around helping people get set up and get going at home. So, you know, lots of stuff around well-being, lots of stuff around safety, even basic things like ergonomics, how to set up your screen, but also tips and tricks around, you know, make sure you're monitoring how long you're on a call for, yeah, take breaks. So we did lots of stuff in that space, which landed pretty well. I mean, everyone had tips. They were kind of openly kind of sharing and stuff, and you were kind of learning as you go. We have to do much more, I think, particularly, again, as I say, for that middle management population to help them lead teams going forward. And I think that will be the next kind of big breakthrough.
Hmm.
Just a final reflection, really. I think it's also around encouraging people to be much more activity driven and really encouraging them to think about what's the activity that I'm trying to do, what's the task, and then where and how best do I do that. So do I do the task in the office or can I do it from home? Do I need to be with other people, or actually can I do this 5 minutes on a Zoom call or on a different type of platform? Because it then encourages you to really just think mindfully around where do I need to be to get this done? Because the office isn't going away. I think just how you use the space is just going to be very different.
Yeah.
And also then just thinking around, do I need a face-to-face conversation with someone, or actually can I do it virtually?
Mm-hmm. You actually, by the way, do you use Zoom, like the software Zoom, or something
else? We use many different platforms. We've got Skype, we've got Zoom. I was on a call last week with 300 of our top senior leaders. We were using a platform called Jam for the first time. Never heard of it, but it was a fantastic platform to get stuff done, so we use a range of different things.
Because it's almost like Zoom is like almost synonym for video conferencing.
It's becoming band-aid.
But you've also got Teams as well, and then you've got Skype for business. So just to kind of balance it out a little bit.
I actually like Teams quite a lot.
Yeah.
It's a very nice platform that I don't think people think to use that like on their own. People think of Zoom as, let's say, just an individual worker to an individual worker, but Teams is also available, and it's very nice.
Yeah,
I have to say,
you
know, go Microsoft.
I would say at our organization we use mostly Whereby. Especially not for example, internal meetings as well. Even if internal meetings, mostly you have the people on Facebook, so you can do FaceTime, even like a group.
Yeah.
But with, for example, clients, Whereby is like there is no desktop version, so there is like. It's totally simple to just click on the link and you are there.
Nothing to install, nothing to make sure it works. It's true. It's very nice.
Okay, before the final question, one not personal question, but street question. How did you land the job with Vodafone? Like a practical recruitment question. Like what was it? Headhunter or LinkedIn job ad or whatever like that?
So I was in Canada at the time. I was traveling back from Canada into Europe. And on the way over, I did get tapped on the shoulder by a headhunter saying, hey, have you thought about, would you like a conversation with? And then it was a series of conversations. So
it was a headhunter.
Executive search headhunter. Okay.
Good headhunter.
Right time, right space. And they were very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Carl, final question. What do you do? What does Vodafone do that is unique in the world of recruitment? What do you think you guys are doing to kind of push the borders of classic recruitment and hiring?
I think it depends on the level we're trying to engage people in the business. So I would say at a senior end, it's very much around building early relationships and talent spotting super early.
Right.
And it's then getting an individual really comfortable with our culture and us getting really comfortable with them. 9 times out of 10, we won't have something for you now, but in 12 months, we may do. So it's around building up a real kind of strong collaborative relationship, which is a nice way of kind of testing the culture as well. Yeah. So in that sense, it's quite person-specific at a senior level. Mm-hmm. I would say in different parts of the organization, I think it's much more around getting people exposed and giving them practical experience. So if I think about in retail, for example, we will often bring people in on a trial basis to try frontline roles just to see whether it kind of works for them before we even get to an offer stage.
Okay.
Which again is a little different, but we also know that some of our environments are quite tough. I mean, working in a frontline retail role can be quite difficult. And therefore giving people exposure to actually this is what it really is, this is what a real, you know, day in the life of is, how does this feel for you, is normally a good way of just kind of calibrating with the individual around, is this really where they want to go? So practical hands-on experience. I think in both cases, the thing that kind of brings it together is the more we can give people an insight into who we are and our culture, kind of the better.
Exactly. It's a really good idea. At the senior level, I kind of know about, but but I didn't realize that at the other levels or in the front line, the shops that you would bring people in for sort of a, let's say, unofficial or official trial to try it out on their own before they.
And frontline retail in particular is a tough it's a tough environment to work in. So the more we can again give people an insight, kind of the better.
Yeah, we've even done it with a number of our at the sourcing level. We've had people come in for what we call a demo day.
Yeah.
Just actually about a half a day of trying it to see if they like it before they actually sign the contract and before we even make them the official offer as well to make sure that they know what it's all about. Mm. So I guess a similar thing. Very smart. Mm. Very smart.
Okay, thank you very much, Carlo.
I think
that was awesome episode. Thank you to be our first guinea pig at our new podcast, Redefined Recruitment.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. I think, the first episode definitely a success, pushing the borders of what people believe can be done in recruitment. Very interesting to hear from you and your experience. And hopefully Vodafone will be back on our podcast at some time in the future. We'll get maybe an update on those people that you hired.
Exactly.
And they're starting in August.
Second half of the year.
Very good.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
The Redefining Recruitment Podcast was brought to you by the people who believe in waking up the recruitment industry and are living that life each day at DataCrude ATS, Recruitment Academy, and the Recruitment and Talent Sourcing Powerhouse, Good Call.